We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You are listening to KC Sports Network, the number one podcast network for today's Kansas City sports fans. With former players from your favorite teams, informed perspectives, and former insiders, this is the place for you. KC Sports Network is proudly presented by Emprise Bank, your partner in possible.
Hello and welcome into another edition of Mizzou That's Who, Missouri basketball podcast now on the Kansas City Sports Network. I am one of your co-hosts, Tucker Franklin, with Gabe DeArmond and Maggie Johnson. I'm just kidding. We're not going to talk about Missouri basketball just yet. We've got a couple more weeks maybe before we fully flip to Missouri basketball. But first, got to shout out our good folks at Charlie Hustle. I'm wearing one of the newer designs they've got out. They've got all kinds of stuff at Charlie Hustle. If you want more than just Mizzou stuff, they've got all kinds of stuff at charliehustle.com. You can go there, get the new designs that they dropped from their Missouri capsule that they're doing on the college road show. So good, got some good designs there. The Shakespeare's Pizza one already sold out. I went to go buy that one. It was gone by the time I went to go buy it on Friday. So yeah, good for them. Good for Shakespeare's Pizza. That design was really nice. I like that one a lot. But
Loris Bowers had a cool Missouri Tigers one on, and I'm a big fan of the things that say Missouri, like Missouri as even opposed to Mizzou. I just like it. Mm-hmm. Like your shirt, I have that one. I love it. Lawrence Bowers was wearing the new Missouri Tigers one, and it looks really awesome. And it's gold, and I don't think they didn't have much gold ones before. So
they sent me four of those shirts, and they got my wife's seal of approval. So that's how I judge things.
You're gonna give them away, but who knows if they might show up missing. It sounds like if your wife loved them so much.
Well,
so.
Yeah, no. I've already promised to give them away, so.
Fair. Well, I guess we should talk about this Missouri-Auburn game. Before we get into that game, I just have to say, Manhattan, Kansas is my personal football hell. I drove the 2 hours to Manhattan, Kansas to watch the Missouri Tigers play the Kansas State Football Wildcats, and it did not go well. Sat out in the rain. There was a rain delay. Got back late, was falling asleep on the way home driving just because it was just like that drive in between Topeka and Manhattan is just awful. Simply bad to drive. It's very boring. And then I go back to Manhattan, Kansas this last weekend. We were doing some live shows for the K-State Oklahoma game. Good thing we were there because K-State looked like a completely different team than what they were last week, which is probably enough for another podcast. But I have to watch this Missouri Tigers football game in a bar at Tanner's in Aggieville around a bunch of K-State fans. They just get to watch me slowly melt down as I'm glued to one TV in the corner that they had the Mizzou game on. Everyone else had, you know, other important. I think the Kansas game was on too, but the Kansas game was over by that time. But so I just have not had a good football experience in Manhattan, Kansas yet, and I probably never will, because that was quite a game.
The K-State fans should have been upset. Missouri's out here hurting their RPI. You know?
That's true. Has to make their one look better.
Yeah, it was. I was telling somebody coming out of the press box, what I love about this job is I frequently said, like, every day you could go and you could see something you've never seen before. And I feel like I did.
I feel like a couple weeks ago after the K-State game, I said, I've never seen anything like that. I've never seen us just get beat on every side of the ball. This week, I've never seen us beat ourselves more ever in a single game ever.
I've never seen anybody beat themselves more. I mean, I truly can't think of a football game I've ever watched that I felt like the team that lost had it won as many times as I felt like. I mean,
yeah.
I barely looked at Mevis's kick because I just assumed it was good.
I had my shaker. I'm at home. I have those shakers, those pom-pom shakers. And of course, I'm just at home by myself, you know, just being weird or whatever. And I'm like getting ready, like to celebrate, whatever. And he misses it. And I just like slunch back and I just chuck it across the room. I'm so mad at this point. If you can't trust your All-American kicker, who can you trust on this team?
He was 90 for 90 inside of 31 yards before that kick. Like,
that's just, I think that makes it worse. It does make it worse. And yeah. I think I saw them, Gabe, I saw you talking about some people with this at the end of the game about the play calling. There's a lot of places we can go with this, right? We could go chronologically, but I think it most makes logical, the most sense to start right here.
Well, nothing matters in that game until the last 5 minutes.
Right.
The rest of the game didn't even matter. Really, all it was till that point was punts anyway. So, you know.
The third quarter was the most awful football I've ever watched.
Oh, it's hideous.
Look, I want to be clear. Auburn's a bad football team. Like, Auburn is a very bad football team. Missouri is a bad football team, too.
But the difference is Auburn is a bad football team that I'm not sure cares.
Right.
You know, yes. Missouri, like, there was every reason for Missouri to care about that. No, that's a mean to say, because I'm sure the players on Auburn want to win. I'm sure they're not thinking, well, I don't care. Coach is gone. We're not going to try. But the attitude around the program is, well, the only difference here is, does he get fired in this Sunday or two Sundays from now?
That's an Auburn program that had a motivation to lose, essentially. If they lose, their coach gets fired. They had motivation to lose, and Missouri still lost.
There were absolutely Auburn fans who were bummed out they won.
Yes.
No question.
This was so frustrating.
Well, they also know they didn't win the game. They know Missouri lost the game. So, I mean, a lot of them on Twitter were being
But I think more games are lost than are won.
Fair.
Like, I think more games you look at and say, well, the losing team messed up this and this and this, than you do just, man, the winning team just made a bunch of great plays.
In competitive games, for sure. This upcoming weekend, I don't think that's going to be the case. But I mean, most usually, yes, that is probably true.
Yeah, we're not going to talk about Georgia all that much. So if you tuned into this podcast wanting a Georgia X's and O's breakdown of what Mizzou can do to beat Georgia, this is not the podcast for you. We're not going to talk about that. We that's injuries.
Thanks for the stream. Thanks for the stream at this point. You can probably
appreciate that. You can go ahead and close this out. We appreciate that. But no, I think. What I was going to say before I kind of got off on of like, I don't know where to start. This is where we're going to start, is at the field goal. They get the big play. When they centered it up, I got like a sinking feeling in my stomach. I know that Harrison Mevis is a stud. And I know that he is consistent with all get out, as consistent as any college kicker gets, right? But just something about centering it up and taking a knee with 40 seconds left did not sit right with me.
But you understand it's the right play.
I do.
Right thing to do. Mm-hmm. The Chicago Bears did it yesterday and won. For a Missouri example, somebody brought up on our board, Gary Pinkel did it against KU in 2009, and he won. It is because, what would you guys say? What are the percentages? Missouri's first and goal at the 3 or the 5 or wherever they were. If they run offense, what percentage likelihood do you give it that they score a touchdown?
On a first down?
8 on any down, on the first three plays from the 5 yard line, what are the percentage chances they score a touchdown? It's not probably, 100, right?
No, it's not. Yeah,
it's not 100.
80, 85,
maybe 75, yeah, something like somewhere that. Around there, maybe.
Yeah. What are the chances that your kicker, who has never ever missed a 26 yard field goal, makes a 26 yard field goal? Like 99%?
Yeah, pretty high.
He went with the numbers. He did the right thing, and it burned him. You know, it's like in basketball, blaming the coach for drawing up the wrong play. Well, he drew up a wide open shot for his best shooter, and his best shooter missed the shot. What do you do, man? It's not his fault. And I'm not absolving him of all blame. Just that particular sequence.
That's fair.
It's tough too, because you look at that situation, and everyone's like. Like, in the moment, I was like, oh, perfect. We'll win by 3. It'll be great. I don't care. We're getting the W. And then you like sit back and think about it and you're like, well, we could have just given Luther Burden the ball in the Wildcat. Like, that's what people are waiting for. Like, was that even an option? Was it a thought? I think
he wasn't on the field.
Yeah, he wasn't on the field.
He was not on the field on that drive. Mm-hmm. So, but here's how many times have you watched a football game and your team is the one driving in a tie game or behind or whatever? And the first thing you think is don't score too fast, right? Yeah. I almost always would rather be the team on defense or on offense behind by three than on defense ahead by three, because offenses are so good, they're probably scoring. And in a tie game, you're driving with the ball. If I'm Auburn, if Missouri runs a play on first down, I let them in the end zone. I just let them score and go take my chances. And if you're Missouri, you know, if somebody scores, let's say they score on first down. There's a 1:05 left. I know Auburn sucked on offense, and they probably wouldn't have gone and scored. But what if you get a penalty on the kickoff? What if the return man gets to midfield? What if one guy misses a tackle? There's a lot more ways you can lose by scoring a touchdown there than there are by – literally, there's zero way you can lose if Harrison Meavis makes the field goal. Game's over. You won. It was the right play that didn't work out.
Yeah, that makes me feel a little bit better about it, because I was just like, man, you gotta give your athletes a chance to win the game. I understand Harrison Meavis. He was an All-American, correct? Like that he was.
He's the best player on Missouri's football team.
He is. They let the best player try to win the game for him. I saw what he was like on the TV broadcast. He was trying to like explain what was happening. Did he feel pressure from one side and try to overcompensate for it, or I just remember watching that ball go and just thinking that's never had a chance. Like, it never really had a chance to make it, which befuddled me.
The weird thing though, it was opposite end. I can't tell. I mean, we're 180 yards from that. I have no idea if it's good or not, but you guys saw the TV broadcast. Meavis appeared to think he made it.
He did.
Like, did you guys think it was good?
No,
I never thought it was good. No.
No. Okay.
Yeah.
No.
But I didn't notice that he thought he would have made it.
Here's a question for me, and obviously that's on Meavis. Meavis missing that kick is on.
The snap looked fine. Hold looked fine.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Is it on the coach for not, and I know that he has done this, but this is still a question and it was brought up. Is it on the coach for not making Meavis take practice kicks?
Because I understand it, that's been his routine.
But is that okay though? Because
it's been okay for 2 years.
Yeah, but I feel like every field and every weather situation and everything is different. Like, how can you just like go into it and be like, I'm going to do it the same every day? Can you do
that? But I mean, like, he warmed up before the game. It's not like he wasn't, you know, I was standing on the sideline watching him kick into a net before the game. It's not like he just walked out there and that was his first kick. And, you know, I mean, he's made a 56-yard field goal to send the game to overtime. He's made a 47-yard field goal to win a game. And I know we think they're robots, especially the really good ones, but they're slumps, man. They're human beings. And I don't know if Meavis is in a slump yet, but if he misses one this week, you know, it's officially time to start talking about, maybe.
He's earned the right to take that kick, especially with his track record. So, I was upset he missed the kick, obviously, but it wasn't the end of the world, right? Because the game was tied. So I thought, okay, fine. Game's tied. I think we'll be all right.
We were going to win the game even after that.
I assumed it was going to 2-point conversions because I didn't think there was any chance either offense could go 25 yards. Like, I'm not exaggerating. I didn't think either of those offenses could score from the 25.
Which is fair if you watch that third quarter. Really, you know, all the scoring happened, what, in the first – was it the first two quarters, right? Because it was 14 points.
It was 14-14 at half. 14.
Yes, that's right. Okay. Golly, that second half was not memorable at all. But, yes, so the first position for Auburn, I felt really good about the defense. Obviously, Gabe, you brought up earlier, pick taken up off of review. I think that's the right call.
I think it's the right call.
It's very close.
I think it's the right call. But live, obviously. I mean, the thing going with Missouri was, hey, they called it a pick on the field, right?
Yes.
It was because there was a play there. I think there was an Auburn interception earlier, maybe, where they called it an interception. And like I saw the replay and said, I don't know if that's an interception, but I don't see anything that can clearly tell me it isn't. So.
And that's a thing that's going to come back. I think that probably comes back and bites Mizzou here later is what they called on the field. But not only do they get that stop, they get the interception taken off. They get a – that was on third down, right? So they had the fourth down. The very next play, they jump off sides on a kick that was poorly hit. It was a bad
for
kick.
For the second time.
Yes. It was bad. Then Mizzou would have got the ball. They could have had a field goal to win it. Harrison Meade was going to redeem himself. They get another field goal. They get another shot at it. Split the uprights on that one. That one was nothing but good on the second kick. Missouri gets the ball, and their offense is cooking. They looked – I was like, oh, where was this at? I think I said that to B.J. Kissel. They ran – was it the second play?
I mean,
play
it was the second play, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, the first play, down. It was
the first
down.
Play. The first play I was surprised by, right? Because they actually did something positive. And I was like, whoa. shows you my mental state. The second play is a play that I think we're going to probably talk about for a while. And I honestly, I feel very bad for Nate Pete.
Yes.
I do. I cannot fathom that feeling of having the game won. Being that close, but being so far at the same time, that put a pit in my stomach as a fan. But if you don't know, and you're listening to this podcast, Nate Pete breaks a run down the sideline. Good run by Nate. Great play. Mm-hmm. He has not necessarily a free run to the end zone, but could probably get into the end zone if he lowers his shoulder. Decides to switch hands of the ball to stick it out through the pylon. Fumbles the ball on the switch. Goes into the end zone. And it was recovered by Auburn. And that was a touchback, obviously. Auburn wins the game because they kicked the field goal. Missouri didn't get any points on it. Do you think, Gabe, I want to ask you this first. Do you think if that was called a touchdown on the field, that stands?
It just was so clearly not a touchdown. Like, I knew live he wasn't in the end zone. Right. And the first time I watched it, I thought he was across the line and he dropped the ball. You know, I thought he did the, because we've seen dudes do that. Will Franklin did it at Texas A&M years ago. Yeah. Dropped the ball on the one. And it's never made any sense to me why anybody would ever do that when you're like, take three steps and then drop the ball. And I thought, oh my God, he thought he was in and he dropped the ball. Like that was his celebration. Right. But I don't think that's what happened. I think it just slipped. And you feel like, we were waiting to do interviews and I saw Nate was outside the locker room. And I mean, the kid was, he was crushed, you know, and that's all that needs to be said about it. And one of my things, and I know we're going to talk about social media more in this show, but like, I didn't see a bunch of people killing Nate on social media. Saw a bunch of people kind of killing Harrison Meavis, which 2 weeks ago, you thought it was pretty cool that you had a kicker that could play offensive guard. Now you're insulting the kid for the same thing. Let's right. back off that. But like, I promise you, Nate Pete had a worse Saturday night than any Missouri fan. And if he didn't, then that says, then you gotta reorganize your priorities, because that kid was devastated outside the locker room. And like, I think this is where I wish we would get more access to these kids. Nate Pete is a kid from Columbia who voluntarily gave up a Stanford degree to come play football at the University of Missouri. Yeah. And I promise he's just thinking, oh my God, I'm going to win this game. I'm going to win this game for my hometown team, and this is going to be awesome. And he's just, I know you're not supposed to do it, but how many guys have we seen do it? I mean, every week in the NFL, there are guys that score that way. And you talk about what a great play he made, man. He was going to be out at the 3-yard. I mean, Damian Williams won my team a Super Bowl by making that play, you know, like, and nobody said he shouldn't have done it. Everybody said, what a great play. Bad luck. I talked to a former coach last night and he said, at some point you just go, we just wasn't supposed to win that game, man. We were supposed to lose. That's how it was supposed to happen.
I think they call it Auburn voodoo magic. is what a lot of the Alabama fans were saying to me. They were saying like Auburn Jesus or something like that. But I agree with you. And did I have a little bit of whatever towards Pete when it happened? Of course I did, because I'm a fan. And that's just the way that in the moment, like, that's how you feel. You're not immediately like, oh my gosh, poor him. Like, you're like, poor me. Like, I have to live with this. But I mean, he rushed for over for 120 yards in that game. I mean, he
was the best offensive player on the field, I think. Well, maybe Dom Lovett, but yeah.
Yeah, I completely agree. You do feel for him. And after your you know, emotions kind of come down a little bit, I just kept thinking to myself, we shouldn't even have put him in that situation. We should have made the field goal and not went to overtime and won the game. And he shouldn't have even be feeling this way. And so I got a little bit more rational as it went. I hate putting blame on anybody, but I mean, Nevis just missed the kick. And I know a lot of people are still hating a little bit on Brady Cook. And I'm not saying Brady Cook had the best game of his life, but Brady Cook put his team in a position to win that game. His kicker.
The thing about a one possession game is the play we remember is the last play. And look, it did figure into losing the game. There's no question. There's nothing mean about saying that. It did. Right. But I honestly think the worst one is jumping off sides on the field goal.
Yeah. Like,
Mevis missed. Hey, guys miss sometimes. You know, but the offsides, it was the second time they did it. The first one didn't hurt him because Auburn's kicker is very poor. Mm-hmm. He's not good at kicking, really. So
tough.
But then you do it again. And by the way, we're not talking about a Connor Wood hold 10 yards behind a play that took Missouri out of field goal range in regulation. I mean, it's the same. They are, I think, 121st in the country in penalty yards per game. And that you can blame the coach for.
And I feel like we have been in every single episode that we've been, because I've said penalties. I even wrote it down on my paper. I'm like, penalties, penalties, penalties. It's embarrassing. Every single time I'm like, oh, hold. Oh, offsides. Anytime we have a good play, it feels. It's not every time, but it feels that way because they're always on plays that matter. And that play mattered, and there was no discipline. And I use the word discipline on Twitter probably 70 times on Saturday, but that was a big thing. And I kind of want to go back to what Pete did. And I know, you know, he reached the ball over. He wanted to score. I don't think he was showboating, and I may have felt that in the moment until you kind of rewatched it. But I don't know. I just,
you're not supposed to do it. They tell you not to do it.
And and the commentators for the game against Abilene Christian last week talked about ball security with Mizzou and how our wide receivers were running with the ball, not tucked, doing all this stuff. They were talking about ball security on the broadcast. Yeah. So at some point as well, I blamed coaching a little bit on that, because I'm like, is this happening just regularly? It's routine at this point. You're seeing it a lot.
I mean, KJ Jefferson did the same thing for Arkansas.
Yeah.
You know, and actually did it from much further away. And somebody was telling me that Sam Pittman said after the game, look, we tell them not to do it all the time. Like, we work on that. We tell them not to do it. And he said, but if they did everything we told them to do, we would win every game. You know, I mean, like, and that goes back to they're not robots. Right. You can drop the play. You can tell them what to do. And sometimes they hold, and sometimes they dive for the pylon and don't make it. Because they're 20-year-old kids. But yeah, that was the reaction in the press box, even when that happened. Like, I've never quite been around a play, because, you know, we're supposed to just, hey, no reaction and all that.
Right.
But I mean, the Mevis miss and the Pete thing, there were like audible, oh my God. I mean, one of them might have been me. I was, you just stunned.
Two things that were defied the impossible. I think that was kind of, for me, especially towards the end of that game, I was trying to think back to my emotions. I don't even think I thought about like it being Nate Pete. I just thought about like, oh my gosh, like that individual thing actually happened. And I just thought it was unbelievable. Then I tweeted like absolutely unbelievable or something like that. And every Missouri fan was like, is it really though? Cause we're like cursed and like, well, like right. we're the worst team. Like we got the bad luck. And I'm just like, well, yeah, it is still unbelievable though.
Right. Well, that's what I said. I said something about like, I can't believe what I just saw. And somebody said, really? You can't? And I said, he said, that's what I was expecting. I said, no, if you went to the game expecting that, like there's nobody expects that. You might have expected him to get kicked in the nuts and lose, but not like that.
Twice. Not like that twice. Right. No chance anybody would have made that bet. If that was a bet, no one would have done that.
Missouri not only has a knack for losing, but losing embarrassingly. And it's uncanny.
Painfully. I would say painfully, but like I had this, because I kind of hate to do it. It's such an easy crutch to lean on, right? But you immediately connect it to all the other, I don't know.
I tweeted them all. I didn't tweet them all. I tweeted the fifth down, the blank for in the South Carolina game, the untimed down in the Kentucky game, and this.
I referenced in my story, the fifth down, the kick and catch, and the Ty Sedney. And to me, like this one was less painful than those three because those three were against teams that won titles. Like, I mean, big games, right? This was a crap game at 11 a.m. but for 12th place in the SEC, if we're being quite honest. The game itself didn't really mean anything. But just in terms of, oh my God, how did they lose like that? Like, that literally might be at the top of the list. I mean, because Colorado, the fifth down, like, that's not their mistake. Mm-hmm. The kicked ball, I've always said, like, I almost just give Chevin Wiggins credit. Like, way to go, man. That's a hell of a play, right? Yeah. I mean, the Ty Sedney thing, like, it was painful, but, like, we've seen that before. I don't think I've ever seen anything quite like Saturday.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
No. I think we've spent now 25 minutes talking about this game. Been therapeutic for me personally to just kind of get this off a chest. But I don't want to talk about this, but we have to. Okay, guys, we have to talk about it. Because we live in 2022, the year of our Lord, and everything is on social media. Everything depends on what these players post on social media. Luther Burden.
Or don't post.
Or or don't post. Luther Burden did not have the best of days, the most of targets. I have some stats I want to read off about Luther Burden in a little bit, but he has deleted everything out of his Instagram. Is it every picture or every Mizzou picture?
It's every.
Every photo.
Deleted everything. Took Mizzou out of the bio as well, then posted patiently waiting, right, with a black screen and just text on his Instagram story. Man, and the speculation has run wild. Let me tell you, I've got friends that are Kansas fans, Nebraska fans, KU fans, you know, Purdue fans. I don't know, threw Purdue out there, but they're not getting Luther Burden. Who are just like, oh, we told you Luther Burden was going to transfer. Before you hit skip on this podcast, he can't transfer until the end of the year, officially.
Correct.
But that doesn't mean he won't play.
So here's the thing. We talked about this a little bit before the show, right? And I think this is where this can actually be a pretty entertaining podcast, because like you guys bring the perspective of fans to it, right? And like we talked about before this show started, I'm going to be the one that tries to say it's not as good as you think and it's not as bad as you think, right? So I think it'll be good to have two different perspectives. But the one thing that is, social media is all about getting attention, right? And everybody says, well, they're just attention. Everybody's an attention whore. I know 75-year-old men who are attention whores on Facebook, because whether it's pictures of your grandchildren to say, look, tell me how cool they are, or videos of you lifting weights, way to go, you went to the gym, or hey, I cooked these eggs. What, that's all social media is an attempt to get people to pay attention to you, and usually to tell you how much they love you. So while everyone is calling, whether it's Luther, or by the way, we went through this with Tyler Beatty every year. We went through this with Xavier Pinson every week. Tucker, you guys went through it with Tyrann Mathieu every 7 hours, right? And he's a grown man. I mean, yes, are they posting it to get attention? 100%. And you know why? Because they get the freaking attention. Like, it works.
Yes.
And now Luther is, and maybe he's not, maybe I'm giving him too little credit here, but like, there's a decent chance he's sitting in his apartment just scrolling through Twitter going, man, this wild, all this stuff these people are saying, right? We don't know.
No, and I had, like, I was talking about him in an SEC group chat, and, you know, there were Kentucky fans, I mean, a ton of Kentucky fans, just like, hey, if any wide receivers are looking for a role that they're going to get the ball, looking at you, Luther Burden. And they're all, like, tagging him and tweet after tweet after tweet. And, yes, it's like so much attention from people you may have not gotten attention from, and you know what he probably got from it? Follows. Tons of follows, I would bet. So, I mean, do you have to take it seriously? Probably. Do you need to freak out
right
now? You
kind of do.
No. I would take it seriously, but I wouldn't freak out. I wouldn't freak out yet.
I mean, this talk started after the Kansas State game too, right? How many people, I had 30 people say, well, is Luther going to transfer? I'm like, well, I don't know, man. It's like the second game of the year. I assume not, you know, but so Sunday morning when I was in the Atlanta airport, in the Chicago airport, I reached out to somebody I know that knows Luther. And I just said, look, people are freaking out. What can you tell me that I can tell them? And he said, he hasn't mentioned leaving Missouri. There's no talk of transferring. So look, is that the truth? I don't know, but at least I had to try. And like somebody on our board was like, geez, you reached out based on internet rumors. The one time you don't is when it's true. Right. Yeah. I mean, this is what in my position pisses me off about all the trolling is like, everybody that puts something out there, like, yes, we check all that out. We have to. Like, now there are sometimes you know that it's complete crap, but everybody's a reporter, right? The liquor store lady broke the Patrick Mahomes extension. Like, things like that happen. There have been a number of stories that we ended up breaking because the first time I saw anything about it was on our message board. You know, so you have to check into it. I don't know. I mean, he can't enter the portal for 8 weeks. And is there a chance he will? Yes, there's a chance literally every player on every team in America will. And By the way, he had 0 yards on Saturday. And that's kind of, that is a thing.
It's a very big thing, especially if you come to your flagship institution wanting to be the basically the person the offense runs through. Through four games, I went and wrote this down. Through four games, he's had 10 receptions, 78 yards and a touchdown, 7 carries, 40 yards and a touchdown. That's from Mizzou's official stats. That means he's averaging 2.5 catches a game. So round that down to 2.
Now do the stats against real teams.
Well,
I can tell you.
Well, the 0.
It's a catch 0. For 3 yards and a run for 6 yards.
Yeah, and the yeah. Ooh, that's but, not good.
So, I put this in my notes as well to kind of talk about. Do we think though that Luther Burden is drawing the type of attention to him that we talked about doing that could possibly get Lovett or Cooper more open? Is that because I'd rather use him as a playmaker, but if Lovett's the number one receiver right now in the SEC, is he the number one receiver in the SEC if we don't have Luther Burden? I don't know, but it's possible.
I would listen to that if Missouri's offense was good, but it's not. Yeah. They've scored, in effect, 20 points against Power 5 teams because I still won't. I refuse to count the last 6 against K-State. So what? I don't care how many yards Dominic Lovett has because the offense doesn't have enough yards. And I don't care how much attention he gets. There are ways to get a guy the ball, right? I mean, you can't cover the just rise up and throw the immediate screen. You can't cover the goes in motion and gets the pop pass or the jet sweep handoff. I mean, you can get him the ball, and I know it's unpopular, but you got to acknowledge Luther has a part in this too. I mean, because he ran a 40-yard pattern down the sideline and Brady Cook threw a back shoulder ball and it wasn't perfect, but it could have been caught and it wasn't.
Yep.
The same pass was caught by Dominic Lovett. So how often is Luther getting open? I promise he leads the team in drops. I don't have it in front of me, but I promise he does. He's had at least 3 or 4.
Agree.
So there is responsibility on both ends, but ultimately he can't end a game without touching the football against an SEC team. That can't happen.
I think that's the straw that might break the back, right? Straw that might break the camel's back. If you look at it, Mizzou's offense is averaging 394 yards per game. Granted, it's against 2 legit teams, 2 cupcakes. Burden has only accounted for 7.6% of this offense. And if I would have told you heading into this year that through 4 games, Luther Burden would have only been accounting for about 7% of the offense, you'd have been like, okay, well, what's going on? Did he get hurt? Right. Did something happen?
And that's a thing we have to talk about. Yeah. Like, did they bring that up on the broadcast at all?
They talked about him being on the sidelines and looked like he got a little shaked up or shook up. And he was on the sideline for a lot of those possessions.
Because he got shook up in the Abilene Christian game. You remember, he was out for about a quarter and a half. Came back and played, and so it wasn't a huge deal, but we did ask about it after the game, and Drinkwood said something about an ankle. But he came back and played, so that tells me if you're healthy enough to be on the field, you're healthy enough to get the football. So he only played 28 snaps against Auburn, which was the lowest of the 5 wide receivers that played. Somebody who was at the game on our board posted that he was in and out of the injury tent all day and they were spraying stuff on his calf or ankle or something. So he is not 100%. Now, I know I'm almost sure Eli Drinkwitz will not do this because it's not what coaches do and it's definitely not what he does. If Luther is banged up and that is any part of the explanation for why he doesn't get the ball, Eli should tell everyone that tomorrow.
Yeah.
He should just say, look, he's trying to play through it, but he's not healthy. And that people might freak out and they'll say, well, then maybe Georgia will target him. That's better than having RG3 on national television saying, what in the world is Eli Drinkwitz doing? Like, at least there might be a reason for it. Because you know who listens to RG3 more than they listen to us or anything like that? Is the other 5-star recruits out there that are looking and going, why is Luther Burden got 118 yards of offense this year? why did he return his first punt for a touchdown and now he's kind of not even really doing it?
Yeah, I think that that's what's been so weird about this season too. I mean, you talk about the injuries and everything, and did we get an injury update on Zeke Powell that left the game?
No, but I think it's significant.
I think so. And he Chad Bailey off the field, but
yeah, Chad Bailey had a sling on after the game, and we'll maybe find out more about those things tomorrow, maybe not. But again, this wouldn't be a big deal if Missouri was 4-0 or even 3-1 and they were putting up points. This would not be that big a story, but I don't know. Do you guys remember the preseason show we did where we were like, yo, you might have some expectations that you need to check here because he's a true freshman?
Yep. Here's another thing, too.
It's not easy.
I understand that he is probably upset that he has, regardless if he's injured or not, probably upset he's not getting the ball. But at the same time, there's no way that when he chose to sign with the University of Missouri, that he was immediately like, coming in as a freshman, we're killing it. We're winning 8-9 games. We're doing this. And I know that he said he wanted to win and like his goal was to come and win a national title. I think win a Heisman. I get that. But at the same time, like that's like a lot of Mizzou fans, irrational thinking. I mean,
right.
Is it something you would love to see? Of course it is. Is it something a lot of us bought into? Of course it is. But you did not come to the University of Missouri thinking that you're going to be Georgia in your freshman year. There's just no way that you did.
You also didn't come to the University of Missouri thinking, yeah, my first SEC game, I probably won't touch the ball.
Yeah,
no, that's very true.
I mean, it just like, and this is, again, if he is at Georgia and that happens, nobody talks about it. Because there's four other dudes like it, right? It's not a story. It's a story here because he's the first five-star in 10 years. And we're guilty of it too. I mean, look, we streamed his announcement and made a huge deal out of him. We made money off of him committing. There's no point in hiding that. Yeah. But also, like, this is he's one guy. The goal, and again, the goal is to win games, and if they'd won games, to me, I'm going, I don't care if Luther Burden touched the ball. The problem is the combination of not winning games and looking terrible on offense and him not touching the ball.
Yeah, that's the legitimate worst-case scenario, I think, that we could have talked about at the beginning of this season going into this year is losing games, losing them badly, offense looking bad, Luther not getting the ball. And I brought this up prior to the podcast, but I think it's a point worth talking about, especially when we're talking about Luther Burden transferring. I also brought up, you know, Sam Horn's success being directly tied to Drinkwitz's job. And then I still think Drinkwitz does have another year. I want that to be clear. But if Luther Burden leaves, is Drinkwitz gone? Like, that's something I think about it because that was a big guy for Drinkwitz. I don't know if that means if he's gone, do you got to try to get somebody else in there? I don't know. I really don't know.
It would be a bad sign, but there, you would have to know what's going on, right? I mean, there has to be more to it than just, hey, this can't be the NBA where the wide receiver can say, you know, fire the coach or whatever. Right. And I'm not saying, I don't want to, that wouldn't be the conversation, obviously. But I don't think it's as simple as if he would lose, but it would be like if you're doing the little pro con list, like it would go in the con department, certainly.
Well, a lot of people were asking on Twitter about who we would want as a coach, saying people came in. And I'm like, I don't even want to think about that, to be perfectly honest with you, because that's worst case scenario. And I'm trying my best to get out of what happened on Saturday and like push forward. It's hard because it's hard knowing that now instead of having to steal one game from to make a bowl game, we have to steal, you know, well, we have to beat Vanderbilt first off. And then we have to steal, you know, two games. Two. Yeah, it's not going to be easy.
I mean, we talked before the season. I think everybody talked before the season. If you lose K-State and Auburn, I can't draw a path to 6-6.
No.
And it's even harder now because it's not just that they've lost. They're worse than I thought they would be. they're just not as good a team as I thought they would be. And so, like, I picked them to win at South Carolina. I don't know if I believe that anymore. They might, but yeah, I mean, you've got to get Vandy, South Carolina, and New Mexico State, and then you've still got to win one. Now, like, look, Auburn is the 12th best team in the SEC. They're not good.
Right.
And so now you've got to beat Arkansas or Tennessee or Kentucky or Florida, and you're going to be double-digit underdogs, I bet, in all of those games.
I would probably say so.
And at least, and I think I was talking to somebody who was like looking at the schedule now. We had the conversation actually in the group chat on Sunday. It was like looking at the schedule, how many more winnable games are there? And I said one. I really think that Vanderbilt game is going to be a rock fight. Maybe that's me going full pessimist. But Vanderbilt hasn't looked like Vanderbilt in years past. I mean, they look like a better Vandy team. And that's just not just basing it off of the Hawaii game, which Hawaii is a wreck of a program. But it's hard for me to be optimistic about a whole lot after that game. When it comes to Luther, when it comes to Coach Drinkwitz, when it comes to recruiting, when it comes to the play on the field, it's really took a lot. I went the optimistic route last week. I picked them to win the game. I picked them to win a 16-10 game in Auburn. The first time at Auburn, I picked them to win it. I can't do that to myself anymore.
Again, it just goes back to, we said after K-State, had you been competitive or won at K-State, then Auburn is a little more house money situation. Right. But they put themselves in a position where it had to be a win. Not close, not well played, not competitive. They had to win that game. Mm-hmm. And they didn't do it. And, you know, like, I don't think the discussion of firing Drinkwitz this year is worth having. But what I said about that game was the same thing I said about the 2018 game against Kentucky for Barry Odom, which is when he eventually gets fired. And that's not breaking news. Like, most of them do, right? That's probably what's going to end up happening at some point, whether it's next year or next month or 12 years from now. At some point, he's probably getting fired. And when he does, like, that's one of the days you're going to look at. And the crazy part is, it wasn't his fault. Like, no. I mean, I hold the bad start against him because that's kind of a theme with these teams on the road. But
absolutely,
I mean, he didn't drop the ball and he didn't miss the kick. And, you know, so like kind of with Barry Odom, you were talking about that game. I mean, it was a bad call. And if that call is made right, I don't think Barry Odom gets fired after the next season. And that's what these multi-million dollar a year jobs are relying on. They're relying on, don't make a terrible pass interference call. Get 3 feet further before the ball slips out of your hands, right? That's what these jobs come down to. And that's why these coaches are so maniacal about it.
Well, that's just kind of, it was one of the things you were saying, that it's not Drink's fault. And obviously there's things that he could have done differently or whatever in the game. And that's every single game that we've watched so far this year. But these players that are mad, and rightfully so, like, they all want to win, but they got to look in the mirror at the same time too. Like, they can all sit here and be like, we're going to transfer or do whatever. I know a lot of them were, especially the defensive players, I know a lot of them were upset, and they probably should have been, sure. although they did the offsides.
If you're not upset, you shouldn't play.
Right.
Right.
But don't sit here and blame it on, you can't blame the entire thing on it being the University of Missouri when you're playing the games. You know what I mean? It's, you kind of have when I was in high school, my teams were horrible. I never blame my coach for that. We were just horrible. Like, it was our fault.
I mean, I didn't see any of that. I mean, frankly, Brady Cook sat up there after the game and said, blame me, I'll take it. You know, and hey, that's what a starting quarterback should do. I mean, Brady shares some blame in that. I don't think he would be the number one player that people would say that's why they lost or anything. But I think maybe I missed stuff on social media that you're talking about. I don't know, but I haven't seen much finger pointing or any of that from Missouri's players. At this point, no. We'll see if things really go south, what happens, right? But
if they take a loss to Vandy, that might be a different problem. That's an optics issue. Losing to Vanderbilt is not a good look. See, I think that's too about the Auburn game, is that, like, to a lot of casuals, Auburn's still Auburn, right? You beat Auburn, you're like, oh, that's a name you beat. you beat Vandy. They're like, oh yeah, you're supposed to beat Vandy. They don't know that this will be a rock fight, and these two teams are going to try to punch away at a wet paper sack, essentially. That game's not going to be fun. Okay. Let's, anything else before we talk about Georgia a little bit? If you think they're going to cover?
In the first half.
In the first half, yeah. First half cover. Let's see if I can find that line real quick. No, I think we did say this was going to be a shorter podcast when we stopped on, and it's been 45 minutes where we spent just going in on that game, and which is, listen, needed for me because I needed to kind of vent some of that stuff out of just like that game was frustrating, and it's just so unfortunate, right? And I feel like it's one of the things too is that like there's so many things that went wrong. Obviously, as you can tell by the beginning of this podcast, I didn't know where to start. I was just like, well, like this went wrong, and then this went wrong, and then this went wrong. So like
a series of unfortunate events is exactly what I called it.
Genuinely what it was.
Someone else sent it to me as well. And I'm like, yes, that's what it was. It was a series of unfortunate events.
Okay. Georgia's favored by 28 points. How fast do you think Georgia covers this?
Well, okay, so here's the thing. If they turn the ball over four times, like they did against Kent State, we might make it to the third quarter. But man, I just don't see us scoring. And Brock Bowers is a stud. That's one thing too. Is even if Luther Burden maybe would have went to Georgia, I don't know if he'd be touching the ball that much there either. I mean, Brock Bowers had He had two carries for 77 yards and five catches for 66 yards.
He's a tight end, and he had a 75-yard touchdown run.
It's insane. And he was like interviewed after the game, and he goes, "They call me a tight end, but I just line up wherever they tell me to go."
Yeah.
He can literally do anything. So I think stopping him is gonna be a feat.
And
I think our defense played decent, but I don't know if they're gonna play that well.
I think that Kent State game is actually a problem for Missouri because I promise you Kirby Smart has his team at practice going, "You guys think you're good enough to just roll the helmets out and beat anybody. This is the SEC. That's the SEC team over there. He is going to kick their asses for five straight days, and they're going to come." Like, I expect an A game out of Georgia on Sunday or Saturday. And if Georgia plays an A game, I don't think there's anybody in the country who can beat them.
A lot of those Georgia Bulldogs that are going to be playing on Sundays. I don't know if you can say that about this Missouri Tigers team. They got a lot of guys that'll play on Sunday. We got some dudes. The first half line is minus 17 for Georgia. So 17 point first half line.
Tucker can be driving over to Lenexa Saturday morning.
Putting it all on the dogs. Listen, I had Mizzou moneyline in that game too, as you could tell by my tweet where I was saying like, "Hey, Mizzou moneyline kind of looks a little bit good in this game because Auburn's a bad football team," and I got absolutely obliterated for defending and wanting to cheer for my favorite football team. Odd times on Twitter.com, I almost had a good payday there. Didn't happen.
I think this is oddly a good team for Missouri to be playing coming off that game though. Like, they're not going to win. Don't get me wrong. But I mean, if I'm Eli Drinkwitz, I'm just telling my team like, why not us, guys? Like, weird stuff happens every week. You know, Georgia's not – you're not playing the Buccaneers here. You never know. On any given day, weird things happen. Like, they got nothing to lose. They go out and lose. I mean, they lost to this team 43-6 last year, and Missouri fans came out saying, "That's pretty good. I'm happy with that." I'm optimistic about the future of the program after watching that. So, I mean, the bar's very low to feel good about yourself on Sunday.
We've seen really weird things against Georgia teams, and I'm not saying they're the best Georgia teams we've ever played, but I think one year we lost 9-6. One year we lost. That was awful. But one year we lost to them, and they dropped the ball before the goal line, and they still called it a touchdown. And then there was a weird field goal that we kicked, and they said we didn't make it, but I think we actually did make it. And then there was the they didn't blow the whistle, and then they ripped the ball out and ran it back for a touchdown.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
That game was crazy, and we lost by, like, 17, but really it probably shouldn't have even maybe been a loss. I don't know. So games are wild. Like, you really don't know what's going to happen. Do I think we're going to win? No. Do I think we're going to cover? Probably not. But, I mean, I'm not going to say that we can't.
Might as well go play, right?
Yeah, I'm not going to say we can't. I'm hoping that these guys are like, I can't believe that that happened, and Harrison Meavis never misses a kick again. That's, you know.
They're pretty nice. Good.
And, you know, Georgia didn't play that well in the red zone last week, and like we said, they're probably going to bring their A game. But, you know, they kicked 3 field goals.
Look at Maggie talking herself into 45-9.
I was actually going to say, like,
feeling 60. Good about it.
I was thinking, like, 60 to, like, 14 or something.
Hey, maybe Sam Horn will play in this game.
Bet not.
Probably won't.
Maybe Luther will, though.
Let's hope Luther plays in this game.
Yeah, let's hope Luther plays in this game, y'all.
Well, I mean, actually, like, participates, you know. Yeah.
Right.
Like, gets the ball. Yeah.
He takes a snap, he can't redshirt, right? Correct?
Correct.
Okay. No reason at all. No reason at all I'd ask why I'd ask that. Just curious. Just wondering.
Yeah.
All right. I guess we should end this podcast. You guys have any final thoughts before we get out of here?
We got... Maggie's got Twitter people that want to hear from our knowledge, right?
I guess that's true.
Let me see if there's a couple.
Sorry.
Okay.
That's okay. Here's
one. At Art Negotiates. Mm. How do you coach up / keep up Nathaniel Pete's spirits and confidence going forward? You just keep giving him the ball?
Yeah.
Just get back on the horse.
Put him out there and give him the ball on the first play of the game. That's all you can do.
Yeah.
Back inside.
I mean, he's not going to make that mistake again.
He clearly is their number one running back at this point. That became obvious on Saturday.
And he should be.
Yeah.
And Schrader had a touchdown. It was a nice run. I mean, didn't he have a touchdown? Yeah.
I think you're right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I kind of forgot everything that happened in the first 55 minutes of that game.
Is his first touchdown from Mizzou?
He had one earlier.
No, he had one. Yeah.
Well, the Missouri Twitter account lied then because he said for his first touchdown as a Tiger.
That's a lie. Yeah.
It wasn't.
Maybe it was his first SEC touchdown as a Tiger.
They probably did some stupid
qualifier. First touchdown like against the Tigers.
Yeah.
And it just
probably some weird.
My dumb brain just didn't translate it.
First touchdown before 1:30 p.m. Central Time for Missouri.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'll ask this one. At Doug_Witty1. Is there a reason for some hope with this defense after a good 3 out of 4 of the quarters of play against Auburn?
They're a borderline top 25 defense.
Tyron Hopper looked amazing again.
He's having an all SEC year. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's having a get drafted year, I think. There's reason for hope, but they just need any sort of help from the other side of the ball.
Hopper looks a lot better than he did at Florida. Like Florida, he did not look like this, which good to see. That's what you want from your transfers.
You didn't see him much at Florida either, though. I'm pretty positive.
he looked good in the Missouri game last year. I agree with you though, Tucker. Like he was really good against Missouri last year. He wasn't this good in the rest of their games.
Right. I made a note of that about the defense. Like, I think the defense is better, but then like also Auburn's really bad. So it's just like one of those things where it's like, I don't know. Like, I think the defense has been a lot better other than that first quarter where they got absolutely gashed.
I mean, you remember what they did against really bad teams last year. They're clearly better. Yeah,
they are.
You know,
Just from week to week, I think that they got better even.
And I tweeted that about that first quarter too, Tucker. And people jumped at me. I said, this is the most uncompetitive I've ever seen Mizzou look. And knowing that Auburn was bad, and you know, I got some attitude for it, but they didn't look competitive in that first quarter. I do not know how. And they stepped it up in the second quarter, I will say. But that first quarter, it was ugly. It was horrible.
It was bad. Yeah.
It was worse than watching the stagnant teams go at it in the third and fourth. first quarter.
Some of us, and by some of us, I mean me, are old enough to remember 77-0 and 73-0 and 66-0, which were all scores of Missouri football games.
One was a K-State game, right?
One was a K-State game, one was A&M, and one was Oklahoma. Yeah.
Yeah.
Might be the score this week.
Well, hopefully what happened in that game won't happen in this one. Barry Switzer, like, basically told Missouri, like he could hear their plays over the headsets or something like that. He basically knew what they were running. So he told him at halftime it didn't matter.
you know.
Oh boy. let me ask this last question. So it's at Baramus Prime. So it says we are two fluke plays away from being 3-1 with an SEC road win. The narrative would be much different now had Mizzou pulled out a win. Question is, how will this team respond? Does this define the rest of the season, or is it a turning point?
You know who talks at this end of the season how close they were to being really good? Bad teams. Good teams make those plays. Like, they just do. Because every team that finishes 4-8 can find you four plays that would have gotten them to 8-4. Every single team. But the weird thing is, I just don't know how much we find out this week. Right? Like, Missouri could play well and lose by four touchdowns. So I think the next time we learn much about them is probably in Gainesville next week.
At 11 a.m. in the swamp.
11 a.m.
Too bad Mizzou doesn't get paid for these to go play these games against Georgia, you know?
Buy games. Yeah. Georgia and Alabama should have to pay the rest of the SEC to come play them.
Listen, it's not a bad business strategy for Mizzou there. Like, hey, you still want us for easy wins? You got to pay us for easy wins, or we're going to go to the MAC.
We're going to go play in the Southland.
Well, it's kind of like what everyone's talking about. I mean, we're sitting here, and, you know, Arkansas obviously lost to A&M the other day, and Miami lost to whomever they lost, Middle Tennessee.
Yeah.
But we know what teams are going to be the top, at least three. I don't know who that fourth team is going to be. Probably not a Big 12 team, because they're just beating each other up. So it's, you know, unlikely that it's a Big 12 team. Could be. I don't know. But we're all just playing for bowls and trying to get recruits at this point. Like, no one's playing because they're actually thinking they're going to make it to the college football playoffs, except maybe six teams.
Right.
But
on the
trying to fill the last spots.
I mean, you want hope, and the crappy part of this is we're now at the point where everybody feared you might be, which is you're a month in and Missouri fans are going, why should I care? Mm-hmm. Like, you're a month into the season. You're about to be 2-3. Your best win's Louisiana Tech. The most interesting thing to talk about is a wide receiver's Instagram story. I mean, you know, they're about a 500 team in September over the last 5 years. And it's not just that they haven't been great. It's that they just kill all interest before fans even really feel like the season started. And, it's why they had to win one of these games, and they didn't do it.
Kills me. And it kills me that, you know what, I'm going to be there at 6:30 p.m. on Saturday, and, you know, I hope the rest of our listeners are too, because it just gets worse if we're not putting people in the stands.
Hey, you know, travel's tough. I was really delayed coming back. Maybe Georgia won't make it. Maybe they have to forfeit.
It's Missouri's only hope at this point is that there are some logistical errors for the Georgia football team. Their equipment doesn't show up on time. It gets lost.
There's a traffic jam on coming from the airport. Yeah. I don't know.
Never know. Yeah. Don't rule it out. All right. Thank you all for listening to this episode of Mizzou That's Who. Next week, we'll probably talk a little bit more basketball. But we'll just have to see. We'll see what Luther Burden does. We'll keep an eye on that. So thank you for tuning in here. Shout out to Charlie Hustle for outfitting us today and outfitting us always on the podcast. Until next week, we will talk to you then.